Coordinator for SAICE. I will be the facilitator for today's webinar, Small Modular Reactors, Same Nuclear Problems. On behalf of SAICE, I would like to thank you for attending today. It is your interest and support that make our work possible. For those of you not familiar with SAICE, we are a regional organization focused on promoting responsible energy choices that create global warming solutions and ensure clean, safe, and healthy communities throughout the Southeast. SAICE has been a leading voice for energy policy to protect the quality of life in treasured places in the Southeast since 1985. We are a membership organization, and I'd like to thank all of our members on this call and encourage those of you who are not members to join us today. We will be recording this webinar, so all of the lines have been muted to assure recording quality. I encourage you to type in your questions using the questions option on your control panel, and then all of our presenters will be available for these questions at the very end of the presentation. This presentation will also be available on our website in a few days on cleanenergy.org. I'd like now to turn the presentation over to Sarah Barzak, SAICE High Risk Energy Choices Program Director.
Thank you, Erin. I'm Sarah Barzak, the Program Director for our High Risk Energy Choices Program at the Southern Alliance for Clean Energy. Thank you, everyone, for attending today. We are very pleased to connect with you because you make our work possible, and this webinar provides a great opportunity to learn and ask questions. We have several excellent presenters today to discuss small modular reactors, or SMRs. This issue is of particular concern to those of us in the southeastern United States, as possible locations for SMRs are proposed in both Tennessee, at the Tennessee Valley Authority's long-abandoned Clinch River Breeder Reactor site, and South Carolina at the Department of Energy's Savannah River site. We will first hear from Dr. Arjun Makajani, President of the Institute for Energy and Environmental Research, or IEER. He earned his PhD from the Department of Electrical Engineering and Computer Sciences at the University of California, Berkeley in 1972, specializing in nuclear fusion. A recognized authority on energy issues, Dr. Makajani is the author and co-author of numerous reports and books on energy and environment-related issues. He was the principal author of the first study of the energy efficiency potential of the U.S. economy, published in 1971. And more recently, he co-authored Carbon-Free and Nuclear-Free, a Roadmap for U.S. Energy Policy. Dr. Makajani will be followed by Tom Clements. Tom is currently the Southeastern Nuclear Campaign Coordinator for Friends of the Earth and is based in Columbia, South Carolina. Formerly, he worked on a host of nuclear issues for the Alliance for Nuclear Accountability, Greenpeace International, and the Nuclear Control Institute. Tom, a native of Savannah, Georgia, is the public interest watchdog of the Department of Energy's Savannah River site and is closely monitoring developments related to SMRs at that location. Our last speaker will be Autumn Hanna, the Senior Program Director at Taxpayers for Common Sense. Autumn leads legislative and outreach campaigns on energy and natural resources for the group. Her portfolio includes extensive work on the financing of nuclear reactors and uranium enrichment facilities, as well as other nuclear subsidy programs like those for small modular reactors. We'd like to let all of our speakers finish their presentations before taking questions. And again, a reminder that we're recording this session and it will be available later on our website at www.cleanenergy.org. So let's begin, and we will now start with Dr. Arjun Makajani. Arjun?
Thank you, Sarah. So the title of my presentation is if they are not beautiful, will they at least be cheap? You know, machines that make plutonium just to boil water in my book can't be beautiful by definition. So I focus myself on the claim that they may be cheap. Next slide. All right. So The focus on small modular reactors on the part of the industry is because the nuclear renaissance with the new designs of large reactors is pretty much failing. Most of the projects are dead, moribund, or idle. There are just two, one in Georgia and one in South Carolina that are proceeding based on essentially financing by ratepayers who are taking all the risk of the projects. Now, reminder that large reactors were built to achieve economies of scale, but they became so expensive that they bet the company risks, according to the GE CEO, Jeffrey Immelt, And he said that he would not build them if he were a utility CEO. Now, that was in 2007 in the Financial Times. More recently, Mr. Rowe, the Exelon CEO, has said if gas is cheap and there's no price on CO2, he's not going to build nuclear reactors. So this is not people who don't like nuclear reactors. This is people who do like nuclear reactors, one who builds them and the other who operates them, who are saying that essentially the nuclear renaissance is over. Next slide. Okay, so the bet the company risk part that Jeffrey Immelt was talking about is because the cost of a single project can be equal to, comparable to, or larger than the capitalization, the market capitalization of the company. Progress Energy, of course, is the poster child for that in Florida, where the capitalization of the company before it was merged with Duke was something on the order of $10 billion, and then was building a project with two reactors worth more than $20 billion. That's basically why Wall Street did not want to finance it. And so now with SMRs, you're not going to have economies of scale. On the contrary, when you go down in scale, the per kilowatt cost will tend to go up because the number of wells, the amount of materials that you need per kilowatt is larger at a smaller scale. And that's why they went to bigger and bigger reactors, having built just a 60 megawatt reactor at Shippingport in 1957. So the claim with SMRs is the total cost of a single reactor will be smaller, and the cost per kilowatt may be comparable because economies of mass manufacturing. So they'll be like, you know, the Ford Taurus is coming off of the assembly line instead of the Lamborghinis being made to order on site. So, and setup will be fast. So the claim is that small modular reactors will no longer be bet the company risks, and we can go ahead. Then there are new safety features, underground construction, more resistant to terrorist attacks, and so on. Next slide. So those are the positives, supposed positives claimed by the nuclear industry. Some justification. They have some features in the design that they can claim some of these things, not mass manufacturing. Now, there are lots of small modular reactors, and I'm focusing just on the light water reactor designs, because the other designs really are very, very far away from certification. They're sodium-cooled reactors, high-temperature gas reactors, and the NRC would take many, many years just to gear up to write the safety rules for those other reactors, to accumulate the expertise, to be able to evaluate them and write the regulations to certify them. So what's real about SMRs are these four designs, Babcock and Wilcox, Westinghouse, NuScale, and Holtec, ranging from 45 megawatts to 225 megawatts electrical. Now, one of the very important differences between these designs, three of the designs, the first three ones, is that the steam generators, where the hot water from the reactor is converted into steam in a heat exchanger, are inside the reactor vessel. Now, current pressurized water reactor designs, the steam generators are outside, and they're also outside in the Holtec design. Now, many of you may know that steam generators have been a particular problem with present-day pressurized water reactors, because they tend to wear out before the license lifetime, and in many reactors they've been replaced before 40 years. And if you put the steam generators inside the reactor vessel, this is a really radical departure in the design, and it's unclear whether, I don't think that they can actually be replaced if they go bad before the license lifetime. Next slide. All right, so here is what the TVA senior manager for small modular reactors said in February at a seminar at University of Tennessee in Knoxville. So the concept is, so he's sort of putting forward the concept of mass manufacturing and how the mass manufacturing will be achieved. So he says, I'm building Unit 1, and basically it is going to be expensive. I'm not quoting, you have the quote in front of you. And he said, so how is this going to work? How are we going to get this mass manufacturing going? Because the math won't work on one unit, which will be cobbled together. And that's, you know, he kind of pretty much waved his hand in the air and indicated that that was kind of a quote, a term he was using to describe how it will be done. And then he says, maybe India and China will order 100 SMRs, and once you get that order of backlog, then you'll be able to get the financing. Now remember, it's not just the assembly that is a mass manufacturing. The whole supply chain, all the pumps, all the valves, the steam generators, all of that has to be in an entire supply chain of mass manufacturing. So you have to set up an enormous capital investment to get 100 reactors built, and then you have to get constant orders to keep that supply chain going. Next slide. So they say that it won't be a bet the company risk, but I think it's a financial risk shell game. Why do I say that? Because their estimate of cost is now $5,000 a kilowatt. So if you figure out 100 reactors at 180 megawatts, assuming the Babcock & Wilcox design, which is the most advanced, earliest scheduled to apply for certification, none of these things are certified yet, you need an order book of about $90 billion to set up that supply chain. That's one estimate. That's the same order of magnitude of what it took Airbus to set up the Airbus 350 supply chain. It's a much, much bigger risk than, say, even the Progress Energy project in Florida. So now what you've done is you possibly reduce the risk for the person, that the company that's setting up the reactors, but now you've created a very, very much bigger risk for the companies that are setting up the supply chain. So it's basically a risk shell game. That's what the bottom line should say. It's a risk shell game, not a risky shell game. It's also a risky shell game. You're transferring the risk from the utilities or companies that would set up the reactors to the entire supply chain. So who's going to take that risk? Next slide. All right, so basically, Wall Street is not going to take a much bigger risk on the supply chain, and government is currently subsidizing the certification, although we should bear in mind that companies are also putting up some real money. Babcock & Wilcox has spent some real money, and so have the other companies trying to bring the reactors to certification. But we're not talking about the hundreds of millions that are being spent now. We're talking about tens of billions to set up the supply chain. So there's a catch-22 there. Large numbers of orders won't materialize until the unit cost is low, and the unit cost can't be low until there are large numbers of orders and the supply chain is set up. So that's the basic problem in the financial terms of the SMR industry. How is it ever going to be set up? Next slide. So basically, there are two possibilities. In the United States, either the government could police the orders, industry is already talking about it. Senior advisor Victor Reese to the Department of Energy has gave a lecture in Princeton, I believe it was, and he talked about the kinds of subsidies that would be involved. So the first orders would be more costly. So we're talking about 20 orders, say, by the Department of Energy. That will be $36 billion if they cost twice as much as the long-term projection, and then more orders from the Pentagon. We're talking about guaranteed prices. So there'd be some benefit, of course, from these things generating electricity, and, you know, the government would not buy the electricity it's buying now, but it would be at least twice as expensive as existing electricity order of magnitude. So we're still talking subsidies on the order of tens of billions of dollars to set up the supply chain. Next slide. If the U.S. government is the leading agency to do that. Or we could take Mr. Stout at his word, and I imagine that the Chinese would place the orders. And the problem with that is, why would the Chinese place the orders in the United States? Now, already China has a supply chain for large reactors. They're building more reactors than anybody else. They're building a dozen AP1000s, far more than the four in the United States. Westinghouse signed an MOU to develop a supply chain for AP1000, and a few days later they signed an MOU to develop small modular reactors. Now, Westinghouse protests that small modular reactors that would be built in the United States would be sourced in the United States. But I think I would take that with at least a grain of salt, because that would mean that two supply chains have to be set up, and it does not answer the question of who will set up this American supply chain for these reactors to be sourced. Once the supply chain is set up in China, that's where the reactors are likely to come from, in my opinion. Next slide. So once you have set up a supply chain and you build these things and they take off and they cost $5,000 a kilowatt and there are 100 orders and now you set them up, remember, mass manufacturing means recalls. So far as I know, the companies, the government, the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, there's nothing in the public literature that I have seen that confronts the central problem of mass manufacturing, which is recalls. How would you recall highly radioactive reactors or parts? How are you going to get at these parts? Will you shut down all of the machines once a common defect is discovered? Because that's the problem. So you can control quality with mass manufacturing, but you can't be perfect. And if you're not perfect, then you're going to have a bigger problem than, say, after Fukushima, when about a sixth or seventh of the world's reactors are shut after Fukushima. Next slide. So the sort of exhibit A in this, of course, is that Boeing, renowned for decades for building jet planes, designed this Dreamliner. They did it carefully. It was certified. It went through lots of tests. And then airlines started using it, and there was this problem with the battery that emerged. So what would happen if a similar problem with SMRs emerged? We haven't heard, or at least I have not heard, a peep from the industry about this. Next slide. So I've already mentioned the steam generators. So we could have a worse problem than we had after Fukushima, where more than 60 reactors in the world were shut, 60 in there. I think that's about a seventh or a sixth of the world's light water reactors. So they went from being 24/7 base load to zero over 365 and shut for a long time. We don't know how many of them are going to be restarted. We know the eight in Germany are not going to be restarted. There's a question about how many in Japan will be restarted. Only two have been restarted since last year when they were all shut. So now you have a bigger problem in that you've had a historical problem component that is inside the reactor vessel. And so far as I know, no element of the design or operations and maintenance addresses it. Next slide. The industry itself says, like Mr. Stout says, the operating costs are going to be higher because you have to spread operating costs over a smaller capacity. There'll likely be less efficient use of the fuel because you're reloading a whole core, and the use of the fuel across the core is not uniform, and that's why it's partially reloaded now and the fuel is shuffled and repositioned. That would not happen, at least those are the present plans. And the industry is asking NRC to permit innovations in regulation, by which they clearly mean relaxation of emergency planning zone and so on. And Mr. Stout actually plainly said in his talk that we don't get this innovations, which means relaxation of emergency planning zones and so on, that SMRs will be built. So this is not just my opinion, it's the industry's opinion. Next slide. So there are also greater proliferation risks. due to higher uranium requirements and higher enrichment requirements. If you have something like the new scale, or quite a small reactor, 45 megawatts, the claim is that it could be built in many countries in the world. Now, safeguarding those reactors and the material in the reactors in many countries in the world already quite difficult. And then you would have 5 to 25 times the number of reactors for the same capacity spread out over the over a greater number of countries. There's no data on how to do the risk assessments for the new designs. They are light water reactors, but as I've illustrated with steam generators, they're quite different designs. Underground reactors have advantages, as I mentioned, less vulnerable to terrorist attacks. But if you have an accident, the questions of access, for example, and after accident cleanup, underground would be much, much more difficult potentially than what we're seeing in Fukushima, where it's already a nightmare. Next slide. I think that's the end of my presentation. Oh, all right. So the conclusion is that, you know, there was a lot of hype about the nuclear renaissance. The nuclear renaissance has failed, and the nuclear industry is desperately looking where to go. And SMRs have been hyped. They do have some theoretical advantages. There can be mass manufacturing. There can be quality control. But the downsides of this are not at all in the public eye. They're asking for relaxation of regulations. We don't have a sharp pencil on the economics. In my opinion, they're likely to be more expensive per unit of generation, per kilowatt hour, than present design, which is already pretty expensive. Operating maintenance costs higher and so on. A lot will depend on how the NRC does relative to licensing and regulations. So based on the public information, I think SMRs are a poor prospect, but of course that doesn't mean it won't happen because the amount of money that private industry is putting in and the governmental push is quite strong. And the Chinese have now signed a memorandum of understanding with Babcock, with Westinghouse. So they may indeed proceed, and we have to be vigilant that we're not wasting tens of billions of dollars of public money trying to compete on nuclear technology with the Chinese. The end. Thank you. I pass it over to Tom Clements, who'll make the next presentation.
Thanks very much, Arjun, for that excellent presentation. Good afternoon, everyone, and thanks to SACE for holding this webinar. My name is Tom Clements, and I live in Columbia, South Carolina, about an hour from Savannah Riverside. Next slide. Just want to comment on this. There is, as Arjun has underscored, some of the economic problems. I'm not aware of but one economic analysis on SMRs of any credibility outside the public interest community. So it's very hard to analyze these through the PR fog, as you all know. Next slide. While I'll focus on SMR models being considered for Savannah Riverside, I want to point out that the one model, which has already garnered a DOE subsidy that Sarah mentioned, is the Babcock & Wilcox Empower reactor. It got a subsidy of up to $226 million in November 2012, but DOE further refined that, and they announced in April that the subsidy was $150 million, much less than the $226 million they could have gotten, and that has to be matched by the company. The goal is to deploy that first unit at Tennessee Valley Authority site adjacent to Oak Ridge National Lab by 2022, which is a condition of the DOE solicitation. Next slide. Now there are two more models competing for a second DOE solicitation of up to $226 million. The solicitation was issued by DOE on March 11th. The proposals are due on July 1st with a decision by DOE at the end of the year. As Arjun mentioned, now there are three more light water reactor designs that are competing for that second subsidy, which are Westinghouse, Holtec, and NuScale. The fiscal year 2014 budget request by DOE is $70 million for small modular reactors, and this underscores that the fulfillment of the award and whatever amount it is up to Congress to be funded over 5 years. So this is a place where we could impact the funding request. Next slide. I want to point out with this slide that Westinghouse has teamed up with Ameren Missouri and proposing the location of the SMR at the Callaway nuclear plant near Fulton, Missouri. Westinghouse claimed it was second in the running in the first round of solicitations, newspaper articles, but there is no verification of that from the Department of Energy. Next slide. So the two other models have teamed up with the Savannah River site, which is a 310 square mile DOE complex on the Georgia-South Carolina border. Next slide. Savannah River site operated nuclear reactors to produce nuclear weapons materials, and the last one closed in the late 1980s. So there is no nuclear reactor experience left at the site. Next slide, please. And here is a picture of one of those reactors on the left, and they had alphabetic designations. There are two reprocessing plants at the site to produce plutonium for weapons, and this is a picture of one of them on the right. Next slide, please. And I should mention that a big trouble project at Savannah River site is a 7.7 billion MOX fuel plant. I estimate that the trouble project has a life cycle cost of about $22 billion, which is going to put great pressure on the DOE budget, including small modular reactors. Next slide, please. With major activity at Savannah River site being focused on cleanup of Cold War waste, which will eventually end around the year 2040, some in SRS management are staking the future of the site on speculative SMRs via what they call Enterprise SRS. And this is an alliance of the Department of Energy as and contractors. I see this mainly as a PR effort to get new work to the site, whether it be SMRs or anything else. Notice on the graphic on the left, it says SRNL. This is Savannah River National Lab, where it says in the bottom right corner, all the elements for success for small modular reactors. And we'll talk about that in just a minute. Next slide, please. Here's another graphic from the Enterprise SRS scheme, as I call it. You can see that small modular reactors play a key component. In the top, it's reprocessing, or what they call recycling. Ideally, in the vision of the managers, there would be small modular reactors on the site that could use plutonium from separated spent fuel, which is a GE Prism reactor, sodium cooled, which is one of the reasons that SRS boosters want consolidated spent fuel storage at the site to go along with eventual reprocessing. Next slide, please. So Holtec and NuScale have teamed up with Savannah River site, or Savannah River National Lab, and the main contractor. And I think one advantage they see at Savannah River site is there's ample space to build almost anything, as you can see by this slide. The dark red areas are what Enterprise SRS categorized as being available to build SMRs. And I think it's on the north side of the plant because that's closer to population areas and connections to the grid. Next slide, please. Things have gone so far with NuScale and Holtec that Savannah Riverside entered into memorandum of agreement with the companies. And you can note that the timelines presented here, and I got these under Freedom of Information Act, are totally unrealistic. With a land lease target date, December 31st of last year, and a framework for a power purchase agreement also by December 31st, and that obviously didn't happen. The power purchase agreement, in my opinion, may well be a backdoor subsidy to pay for construction. And I suspect this is what Babcock and Wilcox and TVA are hoping to get out of Oak Ridge National Lab in order to construct the Empower reactor in Tennessee. The question is, will that strategy work? Because the electricity rates would be at a very special price. Next slide, please. This is a page from the memorandum of agreement with Holtec, which is totally unrealistic as well. At the bottom of the page, you'll see that the backers for this project are trying to tack on the mission of producing weapons tritium and using plutonium fuel, MOX, as a part of the PR effort to sell the reactor and in order to get funding from DOE's National Nuclear Security Administration, who I don't think is going to pay for this. Next slide, please. And as Arjun mentioned, there are other models that are waiting in the line. I mentioned the GE Prism. There's also the Hyperion lead bismuth cooled, and Savannah Riverside has a relationship with both of these companies. Next slide, please. And just to mention, across the river from Savannah Riverside is located the Vogtle project, the AP1000 project of the Southern Company. About an hour away from Savannah Riverside, South Carolina Electric and Gas has the twin Westinghouse AP1000 project. So the SMRs could well be in a position to be competing with these big new reactors. which we hope run into problems along the way. Next slide, please. Now let's explore. Next slide, please. Yeah, thank you. Now let's explore if all the elements of success are in place with small modular reactors at SRS. Savannah Riverside has no experience operating commercial reactors. They have no experience with electricity generation going into the grid or NRC licensing for reactors. Those MOAs I pointed out were totally unrealistic. The reactors, the SMRs, could be in direct competition with the large new reactors by Southern Company and Vogtle. And the Savannah Riverside claims that it is planning with South Carolina and Electric and Gas to build an SMR are not true, as I forced the company to admit in June 2012 that SMRs are not in the 15-year planning horizon, and they filed this statement with the South Carolina Public Service Commission. Next slide, please. Continuing on why all the elements are not in place, last fall, the Office of Management and Budget directed Savannah Riverside to stop diverting cleanup funds to SMR promotion via Enterprise SRS. Now there are no funds available for SMR research or promotion at SRS. There's also no indication that the DOE's Office of Nuclear Energy will pay for any SMR venture at SRS, and it doesn't appear that Office of Nuclear Energy is prepared to pay for construction cost. Savannah Riverside is a cleanup site funded by the Office of Environmental Management and DOE with no SMR mission or funding. Also, as Arjun mentioned, there's a real problem with nuclear waste. The SRS management and vendors refuse to say at meetings I attend what will happen with the spent fuel and spent reactors. And you can imagine shipping those spent reactors all over the roads is going to be a nightmare. Next slide, please. I include these next two slides basically to show what kind of presentation we're getting both from DOE and the industry. It's basically a list of bullet points. And there's hardly any justification for the safety or economic aspects of the reactor projects. As far as I can see, none of the claims for the economic justification have been substantiated. Next slide, please. And I just present this to show that this is part of the Department of Energy's PR campaign to push small modular reactors. And a note of warning is advised here is the new Energy Secretary, Ernie Moniz, is very gung-ho for SMRs. So we have to wait to see what he does. Next slide, please. Now, Arjun talked a lot about the economics. And the only economic assessment I've seen is by Oak Ridge National Lab. And this became public maybe about 2 weeks ago. And it cast doubts on the economics of SMRs. I want to point out two things from the conclusions. And Arjun has mentioned one of these. One is the construction cost per kilowatt hour is higher. And there could also be more nuclear waste per kilowatt hour. And second, doubts are raised about the competitiveness with large nuclear reactors, and Arjun has gone over this. Next slide, please. Further, in more conclusions of the report, it questions the rosy economic claims by DOE and SMR vendors. You can see the first sentence there. The preliminary analysis using nominal values for construction and operation parameters demonstrate that SMRs face economic challenges in the typical electric market. So what could be the first economic analysis by DOE is not very positive. Next slide, please. And this is my last slide. Finally, as you can see, MPower is listed on the NRC's reactor licensing schedule as applying for a construction license in 2015. And that would be the blue bar that's right up from the bottom, which says TVA Clinch River construction permit application. Even if a license is obtained, which is an open question, I conclude it is doubtful that construction will go forward by the 2020 operating date, at least, given construction costs and the financial shape of TVA. SMRs at SRS are even more far-fetched than the MPower proposal with TVA, and I feel very doubtful. In conclusion, given the weaknesses in SMR proposals now before us, I believe it is the time for public interest groups to step up and stop this potential boondoggle. Thank you very much. And now over to Autumn.
Thank you, Tom. Good afternoon. I'm Autumn Hanna, and I'm Senior Program Director at Taxpayers for Common Sense. Today, I'd like to focus my comments on the taxpayer subsidies for small modular reactors. Building on the great information that Tom and Arjun just presented, I'd like to discuss some of the taxpayer concerns surrounding federal supports for these reactors. Next slide, please. First of all, let me tell you a little bit about Taxpayers for Common Sense. Taxpayers for Common Sense is a national nonpartisan budget watchdog organization. We cover a range of areas in the federal budget, from energy and natural resources, national security, transportation, agriculture, water resources. We're really best known for creating strategic alliances, folks from the left and the right, so bringing together true fiscal conservatives and progressive liberals to advocate on behalf of the same issue, to work together for that goal. On the side of nuclear issues, we've worked with Congressman Ed Markey, Democrat from Massachusetts, alongside with Congressman Steve Pierce, a Republican from New Mexico, to end uranium enrichment subsidies for the United States Enrichment Corporation. We've worked with former Congressman Dennis Kucinich and conservative Republican Congressman Tom McClintock from California to end energy loan guarantees, including those for nuclear power. So that's really what we think is key in helping defeat some of these wasteful subsidies. Next slide, please. Just this past February, we gave small modular reactors the Golden Fleece Award. We actually presented that to the Department of Energy for the small modular reactor subsidies. A little bit about the Golden Fleece, it was something that Senator William Proxmire started in 1975 and made famous. It was bestowed to TCS in 2000, and we continue today to give Golden Fleeces to projects that we think are extremely egregious waste of taxpayer dollars. We think small modular reactors fit this bill because the idea of mini nukes across the country and the risks and costs associated with that and the taxpayer liabilities would be enormous. And right now, the fact that we are starting a new program for subsidies at the Department of Energy and giving money to it, tens of millions of dollars, in a time where we are getting across the board budget cuts and really folks on Capitol Hill are fighting to preserve vital programs, the idea that we would be subsidizing small modular reactors seems particularly egregious. On the slide, too, we mentioned some of our famous leases. The Bridge to Nowhere is one of the Alaska Bridge that folks may have heard of that really demonstrated how egregious earmarks could be is one of our most famous lease awards. Next slide, please. So what are small modular reactors? Tom and Arjun both covered a lot of the details here, but really, I mean, these are smaller reactors, but what makes them different than what we've done before is that they would be modular, factory produced, this assembly line that Arjun really got into the details of, and they would be shipped to sites all across the country, could be powering universities, small communities, could be anywhere, and part of the deal with small modular reactors is that they would be everywhere and that you'd need to construct at least 100 of them to reach that economies of scale and then just expand from there. So the vision that industry is thinking is that these would be everywhere. And again, to us, that just spells enormous taxpayer liability. Next slide, please. So we really think that small modular reactors are a terrible taxpayer investment because they're high risk. Again, throughout the entire process, and then the security and safety and insurance issues, we think they're high cost. For what we do know, which isn't much, there haven't been really good estimates, and we think there are regulatory concerns and really an unknown market for what we'll need and if this will be actually competitive with other energy sources down the road. Next slide, please. So getting into the high cost, high risk, we really, again, you can see here, we're just getting into a little more detail, the $1 billion that we've seen now per 100 megawatt. Again, without this sort of large production and more than 100 models, you're looking at things that could be even more expensive than the costly commercial reactors, the large-scale reactors that we're seeing now that are having huge economic hurdles. And we think a lot of the concerns would carry over to this modular concept, and there would also be market concerns. Next slide, please. In addition to those cost concerns, we do agree that there are huge regulatory and safety concerns. Some of our partners here have really discussed. Again, the Nuclear Regulatory Commission is not ready for this. They've just said that last year. They're saying that again this year. How they are going to handle this is unclear. They haven't really set up a process. All of this means delays and a lot of unknowns, and all of that means more money, more taxpayer subsidies likely, and huge liabilities. And that's in addition to the safety concerns. I mean, right now we provide very generous subsidies cradle to grave for the existing reactor fleet that we have, and so we see much more of the same for this process. Next slide, please. So getting into the Department of Energy subsidies, So the Department of Energy at this point and the administration have committed to providing about half a billion dollars, about $450 million for licensing support through 2017. Some money also is going to SMRs and will continue to in their plans through research and development, about $25 million a year. The first subsidies through this new SMR program came in 2011, and the recently released budget from the president also included about $70 million for licensing support and $20 million for advanced R&D. Next slide, please. This table just illustrates more of what I was saying. You can see the actual over 2011, 2012, 2013, we don't have actuals yet, but 2012 was a continuing resolution for appropriations. We didn't do new appropriations, so it continued at the same level, and we expect that Congress will likely answer the president's request with similar numbers if they continue on the track they have in the past with this program, but we'll be hoping that they reconsider. Next slide. So getting into a little more detail, this is just the licensing subsidies. Again, this is for up to two SMR designs, at least that's what the Department of Energy is saying now, although they have said in meetings with industry that this is just the beginning of the subsidies and there could be far more projects getting these subsidies. But as I'll talk about a little later and as has been covered a little bit, the solicitations so far have awarded one design and are looking toward one additional. Taxpayers provide up to 50% of the project costs, the industry doing the other 50%, and you can see here over the last 3 years, again, about $70 million a year for this licensing support at this time. Next slide. So in addition to that license support, we've got research and development subsidies. Right now, those research and development subsidies are coming through the Reactor Concepts Research Development and Demonstration Subprogram, the DOE. Again, around $25 million or so a year. It ramped up in 2012. But before that, we were giving research and development subsidies to SMRs through the Army, Navy, and through the Department of Energy Nuclear Energy Research Initiative. So this SMR program's first subsidies we provided. Next slide, please. So this is the current applicants to DOE's first solicitation, which is now concluded with one award, which I'll describe in a second. And this came out in March 2012. We are looking at the five applicants, the type of reactors that they are applying for, and the sites. As you see here on this list, three of the projects were at Savannah River site, which Tom described the issues there and the additional subsidies provided through that route already and what we're seeing there, the problems. The company that was selected, Babcock & Wilcox, this project is going to be at TVA's Clinch River site. Next slide, please. So that first award went to Generation M Power, which is a subsidiary of Babcock & Wilcox and Bechtel, to be located at a TVA's Clinch River site. As we were saying, it's planned to be 180 megawatt facility and to open in 2022. Again, with all the huge question marks out there and the costs, we wonder if that's possible and how many additional subsidies will have to be. The award was it's unclear exactly how much it would be for, but it still looks to us like it's going to end up being about half of the commitment of $452 million or $226 million. Right now, the Department of Energy has only committed $150 million at this time, but the program is not fully funded at the Department of Energy yet. Those appropriations coming in at $70 million a year, they don't have enough funding yet, and they're going to continue to ask for money. So I think that's part of the reason we're not optimistic that they'll limit the award, but that could be the track that it ends up on. Either way, it's too much taxpayer money. Next slide, please. So this new solicitation now the Department of Energy is doing was announced in March. It's for the second half, we believe, of the $452 million, and for one additional project. Again, the same terms, about 50% of the project costs covered by taxpayers. It's an industry cost share. Applications are due this summer. We do know some of the projects, as Tom was describing, that are applying, Westinghouse, Toltec, NuScale, and we do understand now that the new deadline for operating date, or at least what DOE would like to see, is operating operation dates for the facilities that are applying to be within 2025 to 2027. Again, we're not optimistic that they can meet that, and we think there are going to be a lot of problems down the road for these projects. projects applying. Next slide. So for us, really, this issue is one of corporate welfare. We think that is, this is something where it's about an industry that is established, that has been subsidized from cradle to grave for decades. We don't think that we should be providing any more additional subsidies for nuclear power, and that industry should pay for small modular reactor development if they see this as the next nuclear renaissance. I will say that for us, we absolutely are not opposed to nuclear power, but we are opposed to these subsidies, and we don't see any future for these reactors at this point without huge taxpayer subsidy, and that is a great concern for us, and we're hearing the same thing from the Department of Energy. All of these concerns, the costs, the regulatory requirements, the future subsidies that they would need through the Price-Anderson Act and expansion of existing subsidies for existing reactors are concerned to us. We are concerned that there are some huge proponents for this technology already in Congress who are talking about how great this is without really looking at the details, we feel, and that there's been freestanding legislation introduced in the past Congress on small modular reactors, and so we're watching for that now, and we also are going to be following the energy and water appropriations bills that will be coming through Congress this year. We hope that they won't be following the track of the administration's request, but that has been where the committees have been so far, and we should see the first bills through the House this June. So that is all something that we will be watching and that will be red flags for us. Next slide. This is my final slide. So I just wanted to thank everyone and encourage you to visit our website, www.taxpayer.net, for more information on small modular reactors and the other nuclear subsidy issues we follow. Thank you for your time, and I'd be happy to answer questions. Thanks.
Great. Thank you so much, Autumn, Arjun, and Tom. It is now time for Q&A, and we have quite a few questions that have come through. Just looking at time, we can go a little bit over the hour, but we have about 10 minutes. A little over that to get started. Sarah, if you want to help fielding the questions, that would be great. And I will just dig in here. The first question, does Price-Anderson nuclear insurance cover SMRs, or would this require legislative change?
This is Sarah. I do not know the answer to that question. I don't know if any of our panelists know.
I would imagine, and this is not a totally educated answer, but I would imagine that new nuclear reactors, commercial reactors, are covered by Price-Anderson because they are licensed by the NRC. They would be licensed by the NRC in their commercial projects.
So this is Autumn from Tax Research Commons. We have heard that and understand that there are concerns for reactors under 100 megawatts with and combinations of those. So it is definitely not clear to us that Price-Anderson, as it currently stands, would be covering that, and that there would be a need for legislative change and expansion. And we oppose that subsidy for large-scale reactors, and we absolutely would oppose continuation of it for small modular reactors.
Could I ask Autumn a follow-up? Only new scale is less than 100 megawatts.
As I don't know all the applicant details, but that may be
right.
The case.
Right. Okay.
Okay. Another question here. Are utility efforts to fund SMR research from shareholders or ratepayers?
Well, currently there's an effort in Iowa by Mid-American that I know about where they're seeking ratepayer subsidies, construction work in progress subsidies, legislation more generally, but they have said that they want to build small modular reactors. I think there's a similar effort in Missouri, but that was defeated, you know, for construction work in progress. I don't know where that stands currently. Do you know, Tom or Autumn?
I don't know offhand.
This is Tom, and I'm not sure exactly where that legislation stands, but I don't think it's moving right now. As far as in South Carolina, there were some claims that one of the big utilities here, South Carolina Electric and Gas, was involved in SMR project, but as I showed in one of my slides, it appeared to be merely rhetoric in order to try to get the first solicitation to one of the projects for Savannah River site. but I haven't tracked this as much as one of the people on the call has from the Sierra Club, but there is a move here in South Carolina to try to get credits for small modular reactors for the same as renewable energy projects, and that would be state legislation, and I'm not sure exactly where that stands right now.
Just to follow up on that, Victor Reif, a senior advisor of the DOE, has advocated, among other things, you know, these special rates, you know, that might not be too different from feed-in tariffs for nuclear, these small modular reactors, among other subsidies.
Okay, thank you. Another question here. So how do we convince the U.S. federal government and the electric power industry to redirect their investments in SMRs to the equivalent in safe, clean, and renewable energy? Could this addiction to nuclear facilities be the reason why TVA is nearing its $30 billion debt ceiling? Of course, TVA has pro-nuclear directors. Okay, so that one is from Jason. Would anyone like to comment on that?
This is Sarah with Faith. I think one of the opportunities that will be coming up in the fall will be Tennessee Valley Authority's update on their integrated resource planning process. That's their long-term energy planning process. We expect that small modular reactors, the proposal they have for the MPower reactors at the Clinch River site, will have to be evaluated, and there's a public opportunity process there. So that's a way to weigh in on some utility decisions, and certainly the Tennessee Valley Authority, the region, has quite a bit of resources in terms of energy efficiency and renewables, including wind and solar. So that's an opportunity to weigh in there. I mean, I think through the presentations that you've heard from our three speakers, the economics of small modular reactors do not work, and you know, utilities should be swayed by the bottom line, and thus I think it goes back in part to the administration and members of Congress to see what this is, and it's an economic boondoggle that's going to trap taxpayers with a pretty risky investment. So I think focusing on some of the financial arguments here, which clearly do not show SMRs to be economical, is where the focus can be. Now, whether the powers that be will listen to those realities is unknown, but certainly the arguments are strong that SMRs are not the best way to go forward with new energy generation currently in this country.
I would make two arguments, that what is being spent now is chump change compared to what would be required, because I demonstrated that the advocates themselves, like Vic Reif, are talking about subsidies that, when you add them up, they haven't, but I did, are in the tens of billions of dollars. And at a time when, you know, everything civilian and Pentagon is being cut, it seems not sensible. And so we should make the argument that to cut off the subsidies of development now and not waste money on something that has basically two choices of happening, either tens of billions of dollars of government subsidies or a supply chain in China. And neither of those are really going to fulfill any of the promises that the industry is talking about. And if we make that case forcefully, we might be able to cut off the funding now.
Okay, thank you, guys. Another question here. If SRS were chosen as an SMR site, would the SRS have to go through an NEPA review?
This is Tom. When Savannah River site was first looking at SMRs, it was proposed by one of the site contractors that they not get NRC license, and they wanted to call it a prototype or something. But as it would be a demonstration for further sale and possibly connected to the grid, it would be required to get an NRC license. And it took some effort, but they finally admitted they would have to get an NRC license. So, yes, it would have to go through a full-scale NEPA process, no matter if it wasn't NRC licensed. But I haven't heard any mention whatsoever about that related to the models that would potentially be looked for at Savannah Riverside. And maybe someone else could clarify as well. I haven't heard about the NEPA analysis on the MPower reactor. Does anybody know of what, if any kind of presentation has been made about a timeline for that? There hasn't been a license application yet, so it's probably a couple years away.
You know, this is Sarah. I have not heard a schedule in relation to that, but obviously a process would have to occur with TVA going through the NEPA process.
Okay, we have another question here. And this may have been mentioned early on. Susan is asking, is there a way to hear what the projected cost of the electricity that would be generated as compared to full-size reactors?
Well, you can do the calculation. You know, as with the present full-size reactors, a lot depends on what you assume about subsidies. The key variable is the financing, effective sort of financing costs. And, you know, if you assume low financing costs and on-time performance for existing reactors, you come up with one number, 10 cents or 9 cents or 7 cents, thereabout, per kilowatt hour. If you assume market rates, you know, which would be junk bond rates for new nuclear reactors, because Wall Street is not ready to finance them effectively, they're saying it's junk investments, by the way they walk, then you get an answer that's quite different. It's like 20 cents or even more. And so you have the same problem with small modular reactors, except you have more elements of speculation in that we don't know what the manufacturing performance and supply chain performance would be. Now, I haven't read the Oak Ridge analysis, actually, so maybe that would throw more light on it. But it would depend on basically whether the government sets up the supply chain or not, or whether we're going to buy cheap from China.
This is Sarah. There was a Belafonte white paper that TVA did, and they have a chart in it. We've got this cited in a fact sheet that we did on small modular reactors, and it compares SMR to a variety of other options, including larger scale nuclear reactors, and the cost per kilowatt hour are higher. The SMRs were the highest on their chart. And that fact sheet is on our website under our Learn About page on SMRs, and you can go to page 13 of that white paper for the chart.
Great. Thanks, guys. I have a couple more questions here. Are we okay to just go over the hour a little bit?
Sure, I'm okay with that.
And then any questions that we do not get to answer, we will make sure that the presenters and Sarah have those for any follow-up. What would happen to these reactors in a flood? Since they need water to cool them, they would be near rivers, lakes, et cetera, that could potentially flood. Are there contingencies if the area is underwater?
Well, yeah, this is a big problem, you know. So the underground has some advantages, but one of the disadvantages is when your equipment is underground and you get flooding, then you're more vulnerable to the kind of scenarios that we saw in Fukushima. Now, how the NRC is going to view that and what kind of safeguards against flooding are going to be put into place, that's unclear to me, at least at the present time. I remember we haven't seen a licensing certification application yet. So a lot of the details of the design, well, we may never see a lot of the details, but there may be commercial confidential information, but a lot of the details that we would eventually see are still secret because there's no actual application for certification. So it's difficult to tell. But in principle, there's a greater vulnerability the flooding because the reactors are underground. So one of the things, the hype, you know, and the boosterism is you hear about all the advantages of having underground reactors, but you don't hear about the disadvantages. Just so you know, underground reactors are not a new concept. The idea has been mooted or proposed for decades because of some of the advantages that are being talked about now, but is never being done because there are disadvantages.
This is Sarah with FACE. I think it'll be interesting to see how that is handled with the Empower reactors at the Clinch River site for TVA. When you look at a schematic that shows the location, a proposed location, the Tennessee River sort of makes a big curvy bend right around that site. And obviously, though the Tennessee River is a very controlled river, flooding is a issue of concern for numerous facilities on the river. So I agree with the person asking the question. It's going to be something to pay very close attention to, and will be interesting to see how the industry and the NRC, work around that issue.
Okay. I'm going to wrap it up here, and anybody whose questions have not been answered yet, we will make sure that they get answered in follow-up after the presentation. And I just want to thank Arjun and Tom and Autumn and Sarah for a great presentation, and thanks everyone for your very thoughtful questions. We are really thrilled to offer this monthly webinar series, and we hope you will join us again. I also encourage you to view our blog or follow us on Facebook and Twitter. And again, this presentation will be available on our webinar archive page of our website, cleanenergy.org. Thanks, everybody.
Erin, could I just say we're going to publish a small modular reactor short report, and that will be done soon.
Okay, great.
Great.
Thanks, everyone.
Thank you, everybody.
Thank you.